I'd just like to comment. Very good weekend at Congress. Apart from taking away the rest of the weekend, it was a Congress where Labor spelled out its plan. We felt that the main weakness in the budget, as many other groups, was that there was no plan in the budget for growth, immediate growth. And an important part of our plan, of course, was the situation with research and development. We've made the investment there because everything that I've seen shows that the way you get growth and the way that you get a smart economy and a high standard of living is through research and development. But the other thing I wanted to say was that when you set out a plan, when there's already a deficit of $16.7 billion, you show where that money's coming from. And we did that.
What is research and development?
Research and development is the sort of way in which you get industries in New Zealand to make smart products, to be the best in the world, to be the cleverest, to be the most innovative. That's how this country moves ahead.
Sure, but what actually, and this is a genuine question, what actually is it? Because how do you define what is research and development?
Well, the definitions were very clearly set out in the original research and development tax credits. They're tight enough to stop wastage of the expenditure, and they're broad enough to let the industry make the decision, not some bureaucrat sitting in Wellington, as the grant system does.
Sure, but is it science alone, or can a public relations firm, for example, be doing research and development?
No, it's about the productive economy and how we grow the productive economy. It was working well. It works well in every other country in the world. Even Treasury said that the government, the incoming national government, should not cut those research and development tax credits. The government ignored that advice to our cost as a country.
The Department of Labour has put it as their document from last year around minimum wage. It says there'd be 6,000 fewer jobs created with a minimum wage going to $15. What do you say to that?
I also saw in that paper that raising the minimum wage would have a small and insignificant effect on job growth. The Australians, the British, they've both done research on that. But look, the real point is this. The point is that people have to have a living wage, and people can't live on $13 a week when prices are skyrocketing. Everybody that does a decent week's work deserves to have an income that they can live on and give their kids a decent start in life on. And that's why we're doing it.
Are you saying you don't accept that figure of 4,000 to 6,000 fewer jobs in the economy? You say that's not correct?
Well, what I'm saying is that every time we lifted the minimum wage under the last Labor government,
unemployment went down. Off, wasn't it?
Yes, they were different economic times. But the fact is, right now we've got a situation where people don't have enough money to live on. Chief executives gave themselves a 14% salary increase last year. These people that we're talking about got a tiny tax cut, overwhelmed by price rises. We cannot leave families to live with less than the amount they need to sustain their children.
Yeah, business supported at the moment, they've worked out about a $520 million cost, a wage cost across the economy. Do you think business is in the situation right now, coming out of a recession, that it can afford such a big bill?
Look, overall, business can afford that, and it's important that people have a living wage. And when you give a living wage to these people, they go out and buy goods and services. That creates work. That creates work for business, and it gets the economy going.
Where do you think these figures come from then, that say there would be up to 6,000 jobs lost?
I think in all the research that's been done, they say you can't be very precise about this at all. But actually, the level of the minimum wage has a relatively insignificant effect. Even the Department of Labour paper makes that point in quite explicitly.
Well, make it $20 then. Why don't you make it $20?
Because you can take these things to an illogical conclusion. What we're looking at doing is giving everybody a fair go in New Zealand, making sure that everybody pays their fair share and that everybody gets a fair go. And it's not a fair go when you expect a family to live on a minimum wage of $13 an hour. Good enough for the Prime Minister to give himself $1,000 a week extra. It's good enough to give people struggling to make ends meet a living wage.
Why not $17.50 then? Because that's what the NDU says. So why can't they?
Because obviously there's a balance, as in everything, that has to be found. And giving people a boost to $15 an hour gives them the chance to get the basic necessities their families need without putting too much pressure on the employer. It's a balanced figure. It's a sensible, reasonable figure to set.
Getting back to the R&D thing, the last problem with the research and development tax credits, where the people were ripping them off. That was the allegation.
Well, there isn't evidence of that. Where you might need to tighten the criteria, we'll tighten the criteria. But every developed country in the world provides tax credits. What's unusual about New Zealand is that we spend a third of what comparable countries do on research and development. As a small and distant country, we can't be the cheapest provider of goods and services in the world. We can be the best, but to be the best, we've got to be clever, we've got to be innovative. R&D tax credits are the path to that.
Well, the 2008 figures, though, say that, in fact, the cost is much greater than the $800 million that you're predicting.
No, I've got $800 million to spend, and that's what we'll be spending, $160 million a year. It will make a real difference, and what's more, I've said where that money is coming from. We're not spending money that isn't there. We're not borrowing to provide a program, as this national government has done, to the extent of $16.7 billion in deficit.
So it's not more than $800 million?
We will not be spending more than $800 million. That's the amount of money that we've got available. That's the amount that will be spent.
How can you cap that, though? Because if you set the goalposts for R&D and you suddenly get a big influx of it, which is what you probably want, then you're going to have more people applying for it, so you can't actually cap it.
Oh, look, we will be spending the $160 million a year on average. That's the money that we've got. We're not spending money that we don't have. And we've done our figures carefully.
Can it be capped?
You can insist that the money that you've got to spend in any program in any particular year is at a particular level, and we'll do that.
The fellow Riley from Business New Zealand says it's impossible to cap because it's such a good policy, and he agrees with what you've done over the weekend with R&D. He says businesses will rush to it and you'll be forced to spend more than $1 billion because it has been welcomed by the business community with national candidates. So how do you cap something if they come in with legitimate R&D tax bills?
Because when you've got so much money to spend, whether it's you or I on our household budgets or the country, you spend up to your level of budget.
You turn business away.
We will be spending $160 million a year extra. Business will welcome that. It will create jobs. It will create higher incomes. It'll take this country forward. But that's the amount of money I've got to spend. That's what we'll be spending.
How do you limit ideas in the business community?
You don't limit ideas in the business community. No, the fact is that that money is there. It will stimulate spending on R&D by the business community itself. That's what it's intended to do. But we are spending that amount, no more, and probably no less.
So how will
it be popular? I'm not going into the details of that. There was an R&D tax credit policy in place. It was working. It was working well. And it will work again. What we know is that this government came in, it scrapped the R&D tax credits against the best advice of Treasury, and that has had a negative effect on this country's economy growing, getting innovative policies, getting extra growth in jobs and in incomes.
So why would you limit?
Because you can't spend money that you don't have. I've set out to you, Duncan, how much money we're going to spend, and that will be the amount of money that we spend,
and
our figures indicated.
That is the
estimated cost, and we will not be spending beyond the money that we have. I've answered that question. I'm not going to keep repeating myself.
I just don't quite understand that.
Well, you don't understand, but the fact is we've got this amount of money to spend, and that is the amount of money that we'll be spending. I can't be clearer than that for you, Duncan. That's right, you're Duncan, he's Guy. It's sometimes hard to tell the two of you apart.
Would you prioritise depending on which ideas make the country more money?
Look, those details will be worked out in the policy. It's been worked before. It does work overseas. It's worked in New Zealand. It makes a difference. That's why we're sticking with
the
policy.
Will overseas companies be eligible for this?
I'm not going into the detail of it. We've set out the amount of money. It'll work pretty much the same as the scheme worked last time.
Well, we're frank about it. Companies will be involved. It's a fairly genuine question.
You'll want the detail. You'll have to go to the policy researchers on that. I'm setting out broad parameters.
Do you know?
I'm setting out the broad parameters of the policy. I've answered the question, Doug, and I'm not going to answer it again.
On the NGS funding, what does Fonterra make with them this morning?
It was very interesting because I put the question to Fonterra. Will an increase in the emissions trading scheme increase the price of milk in New Zealand? They said no, it's set internationally. When John Key claimed that it would push up the price of milk and cheese, he was being silly. Actually, worse than that, he was being dishonest. because he said to you time and again that prices are set internationally, not by input costs in New Zealand. It is a dishonest comment. It's wrong.
We're spoken to some farmers today, one of our diligent reporters in Auckland, has gone to some farmers who say that they cannot afford to come into the ETS 2 years earlier, and they'll probably like to quit farming as a result. What do you say to them?
I say that they're getting the best prices that they've had in their lifetime. I sent 3 head of cattle off to the works last week. I got the best prices I've ever got. I don't accept that farmers are in such a position that they cannot meet the cost of the ETS and must be subsidised by you and I as New Zealand taxpayers.
So they're being dishonest and
No, they're wrong. They're simply wrong. Even Phil English said yesterday that on your program, I think, Guyan, that farmers are getting the best prices in a generation. And they are. You know that. It's reported every day of the week.
Well, you think that Don Nicholson is saying that farmers should be revered.
Oh, farmers should be treated in the same way as any other section in the community. Farming is important to New Zealand. So is manufacturing. So is tourism. But everybody's got to do their bit. Everybody's got to pay their share. And we're not asking farmers to do more than that. 90% of the cost of their 2005 emissions will be met by the rest of the country. They're paying 10% plus growth. That's not unreasonable.
Do you consider yourself a farmer or
a farmer? Not really a farmer, but I raise sheep and cattle, and so I know a little bit about prices in the market.
I'm just at the risk of upsetting you further. I'm just wondering whether you're trying to attract overseas research and developers to come to New Zealand. That's why I'm asking whether they would be eligible. So do you want to get a high tech?
I'm setting out the broad parameters of the policy. I'm not putting out the detail. Go on. If you want to have a look at the detail, go and talk to one of our researchers.
Okay.
Oh yeah, but their input costs are going up far less than the prices that they're getting for their product. We're going to get over $10 billion worth of payouts from Fonterra this year. It's fantastic, and I'm very pleased for the farmers. But in this situation, the average person out there is paying for ETS through their petrol prices and their power prices. But they're also now subsidising agriculture. And what we're saying is agriculture causes half of the emissions. They've got to stand on their own feet. They've got to pay their share. No more, no less. That's not unfair.
So did Fonterra indicate to you that if the bill came to Fonterra, they would pass it on to their farmers rather than absorb the costs of the ETS liability themselves?
If I asked Fonterra, and these are the top leaders of Fonterra, would the ETS, would an increase in costs such as the ETS or, for example, an increase in fertiliser affect the price of milk or cheese? They said absolutely not. As we've said consistently, that is set by the international market, not by input prices from New Zealand.
So is Fonterra welcoming it, though? Or that, I mean, surely they...
Whenever there's an impost on any individual or section of the community, you don't say that they welcome it. But they are saying that it won't impact on prices that consumers pay. What John Key said last night was wrong, and he knows that it was wrong. That's why I'm saying it's dishonest.
Does Fonterra think its farmers can handle the cost?
I didn't go into that detail with them, but of course they can handle the cost. They were going to be handling the cost anyway, starting from the start of 2013. It's been put back 2 years. That cost has been picked up by the taxpayer. We're saying that the farmers are in a position to deal with that, and that everybody's got to pay their share.
But you didn't ask Fonterra whether they...
I didn't. I was discussing a whole range of things with Fonterra. I didn't ask them every question, though.
So what carbon price are you basing your calculations
on? I'm not going to go into those sort of details. You asked that too.
1250 or 25?
No. Look, you want detail, ask that of our researchers or our spokesperson, not of me.
If you're saying that the prices of those products are set on the international market, then is it legitimate to blame the government when they go up?
When the prices go up, they might go up because of GST, and if it goes up because of GST, yes, it is legitimate to say the government is responsible. If it goes up because of international prices, yes, that's going to happen anyway.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.